Hello, good evening, and welcome to the New Midlife Women Community radio show, introduced by me, Jean Mack. Today's special guest is Marion Berrington, who is a public speaking coach, and her brands are Stage Fright Away and Speak Easy, and she is the author of Six Tips to Chase Stage Fright Away. So, hello, Marion.
Hello, Jean. Thank you very much for the invitation.
Thank you. Well, it's great to have you on the show. So can I start by mentioning the fact that I've called you a public speaking coach. It may be not your preferred title, but public speaking is a term which brings dread to many people. In fact, I believe it's said to be a fear of public speaking is comparable to a fear of death. So no doubt that's a very strong selling point for your services. Do tell us how you go about it, what a speaking coach is and does.
Speaking coach, there are two things that I do. You can break it down into two general areas. So the first area is actually to help people to clear fear of speaking, because the fears that we have around public speaking, there's a few ingredients that build into this eventual fear that emerges, which blocks people and stops them from speaking.
Yes.
So clearing fears and changing beliefs is one of the elements. And then the other element is, when you started to gain confidence, how do you actually go about creating presentations or information in a way that it's structured so that the people who are receiving the information can get it clearly? Because obviously when we share information, when we're communicating, the purpose of that is for the other person to understand. So there's those two areas. There's the confidence, building the confidence, and then there is the clarity, making sure that what you're saying is done in a way that is clear and that you're understood by your audience.
That's such a brilliant distinction, because so many people start preparing their speech before they've come to terms with the fact that they're going to make the speech, and so obviously that's a heresic experience to be doing it whilst still your knees knocking. So very interesting distinction. Thank you. So can you tell us something about how you your journey to become a public speaking coach? Is it something you've come to latterly, or is it something you've done for many years? How's it?
No, it's been a slow boil, shall we say. So for me, I've always been a very confident speaker, but something I had problems with was if the audience in front of me didn't seem to be entertained, or if they weren't in the state that I thought they should be in, then I would begin to get a bit panicky. And the one fear that I've always had until recently was speaking out loud from when I was reading, because I don't read very quickly, and I know I've got a reader's voice. I think most people do. When we read, we obviously find it difficult to inject emotion. It's a real skill, isn't it? I think this is one of the things that news readers or presenters on TV, when they're reading that auto cue, to be able to do that and at the same time sound like it's a normal conversation and it's got normal emotions injected into it, that's a real skill, and it's one I don't have. So when I'm reading out loud, I can hear very clearly, oh, that's my reading voice.
Right. So how do you counter that?
Well, what I do now is that I don't read out loud. I make sure that when I'm presenting that I have points. Very short, clear bullet points of some kind that are not full sentences. They're just points of information that I need to stick to that point. And I know that when I've structured the way that I speak about that information, there are a few clear steps that I need to take when I deliver it. So for me, this, I think part of my fear started when I was a child. This is a story that's on one of the first pages of my website. As a child, I was really young. It was, you know, the nativity play at infant school.
Oh, I remember those, yes.
All those years ago. And during the nativity play, I was in the choir. So I'd just been given this song to, you know, this stand at the back with your angel wings on and your white frock. And when the songs come on, you sing the song. That was my role. And I was quite happy with that. The little girl that was called Mary, who was very much smaller than me. I'm a very tall, I've always been taller than all my classmates. I was always the tallest kid in the class. And Mary, who was playing the role of Mary, she had got into a big panic and she was having a real strop just before we went on stage. And I remember quite clearly being horrified because Mary was being naughty and she's supposed to be being Mary. And look, she was being really, really naughty and she was crying, screaming and kicking the teachers. And I was just really horrified at this because, you know, I was trying to be a good little girl like five-year-old girls do. Because we love praise, don't we? So I was there, you know, loving the praise that I was getting for being a good girl. So the next thing I know, they're trying to put Mary's dress on me. Well, it was a bit small because Mary was one of the smaller kids in the class. And they pushed me to the front of the stage and told me to do what Mary's supposed to do. So she probably had one line or two, but I didn't know what they were. And then I've got adults and teachers telling me to say the lines and I didn't know what the lines were and I was horrified. And then I started to notice that the audience was full of people giggling and laughing and I felt like they were laughing at me. I felt really humiliated. Now, obviously, the whole show would have been a bit of a comedy. So how could you not laugh if you're in the audience? But I'm absolutely dumbstruck at the front of the stage, not knowing what to do. I didn't want to run away because I would have got into trouble. That would be being naughty. And I didn't want to be naughty. Yeah. And then I went to my dad, and my dad was laughing. And everybody was laughing, but he was laughing really hard. And I just wanted him to rescue me. And he didn't, because he was quite, everybody was enjoying the comedy show of all the kids getting it wrong and, you know, things going wrong.
Yeah.
So from that moment, I remember quite distinctly that if I ever had to go near a stage, I would not be near the front of the stage. And if I walked towards the front of the stage, it was like I would relive that moment of horror where I'm watching everybody laughing at me, including my dad. And all I wanted him to do was to rescue me. And he laughed even louder the more I asked to be rescued. So this, it was like every time I walked to the front of the stage, I would relive that moment.
God.
So absolutely. It was really traumatic. And I used to go to ballet and dancing and all these other classes. And I was always very cheeky, very confident. And all of that stopped at that point. So it was really quite a trauma. And I think that led on to my fear of speaking out loud when I was reading, you know, the reading in class stuff.
Understandably, I'm surprised you ever got up and spoke again.
So, but now I can see from the other side, you know, of how it was. And the work that I do with people as a coach, I do work that's actually really, it's healing and healing from traumas and shocks. So that we can release the trauma and the shock and become brilliant again. Because, you know, I believe that we are all absolutely brilliant. We're all unique. We're all amazing. Nobody's better than anybody else. And I really believe that that's true. So the more authentically we can grow into our own skin, if you like, the more we can get rid of those old trauma patterns that are just are part of our history. And often they've given us really great skills. But we're not able to use those skills because of the fear of reliving the trauma. So the bigger part of my work when it comes to building confidence is actually around how to release the trauma, let go of the old fear and step into your authentic self and be more brilliant. And I know as women, this is one of the areas that I feel really empowered in because women, we are given a role, especially women of my age in midlife. We've taken on a role from society of be a good girl, be a caretaker, look after everybody else, and then you're doing the best job ever. That's nonsense because that means I'm not allowed to look after me. I have to put people before me. And it's prevalent. It's insidious. It's like it really infects the way that women are. And I also know because of the work that I do as a healer that actually these old beliefs and behaviours and patterns that have been given to us, handed to us by family, by society, these often end up causing us to get sick as well.
Indeed. But I mean, you are a very good example of a successful, what we call new midlife woman who's reinvented herself for the second half of life. And I know our audience would like to know about your journey to get there because they might be saying the usual kind of thing, well, it's all right for her. We know about the traumatic beginning, but what happened in between?
I was very good at maths, and I was fortunate enough to I went into a career in computing in IT.
Yes.
And so that was great because financially I was sorted. Life was absolutely sorted financially. It was difficult being a woman in that arena because, you know, men, it's a very male-dominated industry. I was usually the only woman in the team. And it would be, I would have to, and I know that I was really brilliant at what I did. And I know that I really supported all of the teams that I was in, but I was very rarely promoted or very rarely given positions of leadership. And I know often when you're very technical, you're not really good at leading, but I believe that my, as a team leader, I've got really, really good skills. And so they were never recognised. And I'd have all these men bosses that were a bit useless, actually. So I'd often be the person who was, you know, offering support to the boss, but never given the role. So that was a bit irking.
Indeed. It's unfortunately not, it's often repeated, and it's so tragic. Hopefully we can do things to change that for people coming up. But anyway, sorry, carry on with your story. Yeah.
So I worked in the IT industry for over 20 years, and towards the end of that of the career, I was contracting. So I decided if they're not going to promote me, I'll promote myself. So I got a job as a contractor. So I would do temporary contracts, 3 months, 6 months, a year, sometimes. The longest I ever did was 2 years. And in that time, it was great because then I could sell my skill set. And it wasn't a woman and it wasn't looking for promotion. It was a set of skills and tick boxes on like my CV and a job description. And so I could get the jobs that were appropriate to the skills that I've got. So that was great. And what I started to do was, because even though the job was good fun and it was creative, because as an IT person, you know, they ask you to create a system or a program. And they give you the key points that you have to develop, but you do it in your own way. So it's actually quite a creative process in that respect. But then what I realized was the people that I were working for, I didn't really want to make more money for, you know, petrol companies or insurance companies or banks or online gambling companies, because these are all the big players in industry in the corporate world. And these are the people who pay well. So I was working for them, making them loads of money, making plenty of money for myself in the meantime. So I was, you know, filling my pockets, but it was not filling my soul at all. It wasn't feeding my heart in any way. And I love traveling. So I was traveling a lot between contracts that I would travel for. That one of my longest trips was almost 2 years. I'd run out of money by that time. So I come home and refill the money pot and work. And then I'd go off traveling again as soon as that pot was full. And I, at the end of this, one of my trips away, I'd come back and I'd got a job in an online gambling company. And I loved it. It was very creative. But every day it's like I'm making money for people who run a business that actually I've got no, there's nothing about me that is in alignment with what gambling is. You know, I've never even been to bingo or anything. I gamble. And it was, and there's something about, one of my ex-boyfriends was a gambler. So, you know, I've got a bit of a past history with gambling that I don't like it.
Yes.
And it just got me thinking, you know, what is it that I can do with these skills and be in an industry where I'm actually creating wealth and prosperity for things that I love? And at the time, I'd been doing yoga classes. And on my next traveling trip, I got an opportunity to help at a gym doing some yoga classes. And oh my God, I loved it. I couldn't believe how brilliant it was. And the people were so grateful, and it really helps people. A lady with a frozen shoulder, it unfroze her shoulder. And I didn't even know that she had, you know, that she had this issue. But she was celebrating one day in the class how great her shoulder was. And it was as a result of having been at the classes. So that for me was just a real big light bulb moment. This is the sort of thing I want to do. I went and lived in India for 2 years and did my yoga training there. Because I wanted to take it very seriously. If I'm going to help people, I feel like I need to know a lot. I'm very scientist-based and computer programmer-based. So I wanted to really get into the nitty-gritty. So 2 years in India, And my health started to deteriorate. I was getting fitter and I was getting healthier on a surface level, but I started to have an autoimmune disease that was affecting my thyroid and my eyes. And by the end of my 2 years in India, I had a huge inflammation process happening around my eyes. Apparently they connected to the thyroid, and I had double vision, and my vision was really badly impacted, as well as my confidence. All sorts of horrible things were happening. Like, as I walked down the street with the double vision, it was like buses were driving through me and cars were driving through me. It was a very strange experience. And I couldn't work in IT anymore because I couldn't see properly. I couldn't drive anymore. It was like my life had been snatched away from me. It was horrible. They said they were going to give me all this toxic medication. They were going to give me 7 different types of surgery, and still they couldn't guarantee that I would regain my single vision. So I said no. They were talking about popping out my eyeballs and all sorts of awful things.
Ooh.
I know. It was just horrific. So I dropped into a really deep depression. And my brother, who lives in London, he knows a lady who does, it's called craniosacral osteopathy. She's a magic, lovely lady. So my brother took me to see her, and she said something that was so profound. It actually brings emotion up when I think about it even now. She said, you know, your body has a template, and it's always been there, and it will always be there. Your body knows health, and it knows how to get back to that health. You've just been shown that there's something that you need to change about the way that you're being, about your personality. Something needs to shift to get you back to your original template.
Wow.
And that really shook me from the core. And after 2 years in India, I understand that the personality is a mask that we wear. It's the identity that we have. It's not the person that I am. It's an identity I wear. It's like an outfit that I wear.
Yes.
You know, and it shifts and changes, doesn't it, Jean? When we're with different people, we have a slightly different way of behaving and being. So if I'm talking to a 5-year-old child, I'm going to be in a very different state to when I'm working in front of a room full of corporates, for example.
Of course.
So you know, we've got all of these masks, and none of them are me, the authentic me. So then my journey began. How do I get back to being me? How do I get back to being me? And my real tight goal was to regain my single vision. And that was in 2009 when I was diagnosed. So that was 8 years ago.
Yes.
Yeah, 8 years ago. And since then, I've recovered my single vision. I still have double vision in the periphery, but I've recovered my single vision by about 70%. I've improved my state without any medication, without any surgery. And I've done it all by going back to all of the traumas and all of the stresses in my life that had shifted the way that my identity was formed. And I've gone back into my past, if you like, and had conversations with my younger selves. And I use different energy techniques and different yoga techniques to help to release the old trauma, which was like this soup of the identity, and the more I release, the more of my authentic self I reveal.
Wow, and that's such a powerful message for the midlife woman, because the reason we talk about the new midlife woman community, well, it's not because there was an old midlife woman community, it's because midlife women need to find themselves, and as a result of that, they renew themselves, or they reinvent themselves. You've very graphically gone through.
Yes, I see it very positively. I see it like, you know, the spirit or the universe or whatever you think is the greater power. And I know there's a greater power, because even my body is a greater power than my mind. My body knows how to digest a raisin. My mind's got no idea. So this greater power that we all are connected to, something in it, it literally took away all of my abilities, because what I was doing, it wasn't serving me. And I knew that there was something not right, which is why I was traveling. And now I understand that all of my travels were actually just a form of running away.
Wow. Very interesting.
Hmm.
So, how did you then come to focus on, I mean, obviously you have a lot of amazingly valuable skills, but how did you come to focus on the speaking area?
I started to invest, as I was coming out of the depression, I wanted to bring yoga into the corporate world. And I knew that even though I was from the corporate world, I was always considered a bit strange, bit of a weirdo, bit of a hippie.
Such a bad thing.
I love it. People say that they think hippies are an insulting word. It's not for me. It's the opposite.
Good.
Very happy to be called a hippie any day. Thank you. But I knew that in order for the corporate world to take me seriously, because I had quite a limited view of what the corporate world really was. I'd been in it and I'd worked in it. And I knew that in order to be taken seriously, you have to be, you know, very, very serious and very proper. And you have to be very clear about what it is that you want to express and communicate. And you also have to understand the needs of the business in a way that the business hears that you can see their problems and that you can help to provide the solutions for those problems. I was at an event where Bob Proctor was speaking. I got into personal development by this stage, and I'd learned about a thing called EFT, which is tapping, emotional freedom techniques, tapping on acupuncture points. And I still use that one. That's a very powerful process to use. And so I trained to be a practitioner, and one of my fellow trainees, Erica, she said, I've got these tickets to Bob Proctor. Will you come with me? So I went and I saw a guy deliver a public speaker training presentation, and his name's Andy Harrington. And I just loved what he did. I loved the way that he delivered his content from stage. And I thought, this, if I can do this, then this is how I can bring the corporate yoga world, you know, alive, if you like, in London. I did his training and I really enjoyed the community that is there and started to go. So he used to do a monthly event, so I started going to the monthly event, which was training and practicing. And while I was doing that, he decided he would change his business model, and he invited me to be one of his coaches. So I started to coach with the team, the Andy Harrington team. And then I realized that actually what he's teaching people to do is to make the content very clear. What he's not doing is clearing fear. So I spotted this gap in the market.
Yes.
In order to speak clearly, you actually have to manage those fears. And so that was where the birth of Stage Fright Away came from. And it's been a really brilliant journey since I developed the business. And Speakeasy is my first product. So this is something that you can do without me. It's a video product where I use the EFT, the tapping, as a process. And when you do Speakeasy, I give you lots of questionnaires. So we get into the nitty-gritty of the issues that are blocking you from being confident. And then you follow some video training. So that was a really lovely process to do because I am a public speaker and I coach and mentor as public speaking, and because I do the fear clearing and the block clearing. To put those two worlds together was just, it was like a dream come true for me to be able to, you know, like when something, you know, you say that little diamond drops into your lap.
Yes.
When the idea for Stage Fright Away and Speakeasy came, that was what it was. It was like a light bulb moment, and the diamond all appeared all at the same time.
Wonderful. And can you tell us about some of the people, particularly if they are midlife women, who you've been able to help to move them to this different level of performance?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So I have one of my clients, she's a fitness coach. And her story is a very sad story. She's gay and she was married, and she'd lost her first wife to cancer. But it was really a big part of her journey. But because she would get so distressed when she was sharing this part of her journey, she was finding speaking very difficult. Because as a speaker, you do need to share your story, because otherwise, why would the audience bother to listen to me if I haven't got a story that resonates with my audience, you know?
Yes.
And so she would find it very difficult to tell people why she was doing what she was doing, where her passions and motivations came from, because it was such a, because she wants to help women who've got cancer. and to help them to, you know, get fit again, or to manage their illness, or to manage when they're on medication, the side effects. And so when we started working together, she couldn't get two sentences into her story without bursting into tears. And so what we did over a few weeks, we cleared the really deep grief. It was actually unprocessed grief.
Because
she, and we often do this, she didn't feel that she could release the grief because people rely on her to be the strong woman.
Oh dear.
Exactly. And how could she be the strong woman if she's breaking down in tears in front of people? So what we've done, two things that we've done, is we've helped her to process the grief more, so that even if she does get upset, she knows it's just a rising emotion, and if you allow the emotion to move, it, you know, don't block it or swallow it, it will actually move on quite quickly. But what she's also realised, so that it's okay to be emotional in front of people, that as a woman, vulnerability is actually one of our biggest powers, one of our biggest strengths, to be vulnerable. And it's the society that labels vulnerability as a weakness. So once we begin to understand that you can really step into your power as a woman and be vulnerable, and it's okay, and be emotional, and it's okay, because in 5 minutes' time, you know, if you've had a good cry or you've had a good rant or whatever it is you need to appreciate, to process those emotions, allow yourself to go through that process. Forgive yourself and get on with whatever it is that you want to do, because it'll have, you'll step back into your space with more clarity.
Indeed.
Yeah, and to be able to express emotions as a woman, it's crucial, isn't it, that we're allowed to do that?
Well, it's part of this mission that I have of reviving feminine power.
Yes.
I won't go into it now, but you've touched on it brilliantly there, on the fact that as a woman we have different power from the masculine one, which is the uptight, got to control everything, got to look as if I'm, which is exactly the opposite.
Yes.
So absolutely, I agree with you.
And then I've got another client who I worked with very recently, and she was asked at a, I was at a presentation, and she was asked to come on stage.
Yes.
To receive an award, and I think she was about to vomit just before she got the award. She went, she's a Middle Eastern lady, so she's got a lovely olive skin. She went grey.
She went
so grey, and you could see her legs were buckling. She was absolute, and all she was doing was receiving a prize. She didn't really even have to say very much. So I spoke to her. She actually asked me what I did. And when I told her, she said, "Oh my God, I think I need it." And I said, "I can see from your, what happened on the stage, it would definitely benefit you." And she lives over in the Middle East. And I recently heard from her that she is now presenting on stage. We only did two sessions together. She's now presenting on stage. And she started a women's group for women who want to learn how to speak and present on stage.
So fantastic.
I was like, oh my God, her name is Maha. I'm like, and Maha means great in India. And I was like, oh my, you really are Maha, Maha.
Wonderful. What a wonderful story. That's great. Okay, well, moving on. I know that you are going to offer our audience, both the live audience and the recorded audience, something special to start them on their journey to greater confidence in speaking and, well, all the things you've been talking about.
Yes, yes. So the thing that there's an ebook that you can get from my website. The website is called www.stagefrightaway, it's all one word, .com. And you'll see there's a, you can go, there's a thing on the tab that says free ebook, or you can type in stagefrightaway.com/free-ebook. Now the ebook is 6 tips to chase stage fright away. And these are very basic, very simple tips that you can use, and they will help you to regain your confidence, to compose yourself when you have some speaking to do. And part of it is a little bit of preparation, part of it is clearing the fear and getting into a nice confident state. They're very simple tips. Some of them are very, very powerful. And it's a great first step. It's a great introduction into the work that I do.
That's marvellous. And I can say, having been to your website, there is a mass of free information there that people can draw on.
So there's a couple of great things. One of the things that I've got is a process using the EFT tapping. So you'll find, I think I've got it in some of the blog pages, and there's quite a lot of information on the site. And the tapping is something that everybody can do, and that's what I love about it. You don't need to rely on anybody to do it. Now, when you're with a practitioner, especially if they're very masterful at it, you can really clear massive stuff. But it's also possible for you to use it every day. Just every day, whenever you feel an emotion is not processing or you're stuck, if it's fear, if it's anger, if it's disgust, if it's disbelief, even, you know, depression, there's loads of things that you can use tapping for, because it shifts you, it allows the process of the emotion to happen and shifts you back into the state that you want to be in. So it's because it's such a cool tool, because you can do it by yourself, there's quite a lot of stuff on there that helps you to understand more about that.
And you've got videos on there demonstrating how to do it, haven't you?
Yes, brilliant. Well, I'm a public speaking coach, so videos are great. And now I actually really love listening to my own voice and watching myself on video. It's something that I used to hate. I hated the sound of my own voice. I used to think, who's that? What's, you know, you hear yourself, you think, oh my God, my accent's really strong, or my voice is really croaky, or I'm really nasally. You criticize. Whereas now, when I hear myself speak, I don't listen to the sound of it. I listen to the content. And because I really love sharing what I know, I think, oh, that was good. I said that really clearly. I really got that point across well. So now I actually, rather than criticize myself, I praise myself when I see or hear myself.
That's wonderful. And it's something for us all to aim for, because so many people, you know, just the sound of their own voice, on a recorded message on the telephone freaks them out. So that's a very good goal. So thank you for that. So we're coming to the end now. So I should mention the fact that you do have programs available on your website for people who want to get really stuck in and commit themselves.
Oh yes, I do. I do the Stage Fright Away process, which is that's a one-to-one coaching that I do with people. So it's 5 sessions or a 5-hour-long session. It's a very, very deep, intense session process, and I use lots of different. I've got loads of tools now to help to clear stuff and help to bring out the brilliance, the authentic you, so that you can really find your authentic voice. Because this is important, Gene, not just for standing on stage. I want to mention this actually. This is really important. That just speaking to your mother, right, for me.
I'm glad you brought that up. I forgot to mention it, that we talked about this, about the nearest and dearest can be your most difficult audience.
Yes, absolutely. Having conversations with my mum, she died a couple of years ago, so I don't have this struggle anymore. But it was one of the most difficult, some of the most difficult moments in my life have been when I've wanted to share something with my mum, or I've wanted to be authentic, and so many things would block me. Fear of upsetting her, and then I'd get upset. So then I'd end up losing my temper and upset both of us. And it just doesn't work when you're not being authentically you in any situation, whether it's somebody that you know, whether it's in an interview with somebody that you don't know, if it's on stage, if it's on video. Whenever we stop and block ourselves from being our authentic self, we're in trouble. We're in trouble, and we need to sort it out.
Yes. Oh, yes. So true. And the power of overcoming, as you have, is so necessary. The easiest thing is to run away. Of course, that makes it worse, if anything, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because our shadows follow us everywhere we go.
Yes. Right. Well, thank you, Marion, for all that wonderful wisdom and experience and insight.
Oh, it's been lovely, Jane. It's been great talking to you.
Good, good. So let me just remind people that if you're listening to the recording, you won't have any screen reference. So the website is stagefrightaway.com/free-ebook. But once you get stagefrightaway.com in there, you'll see all things. And as Marion said, it's a thing across the top, the free ebook, so you can go to it that way. Yeah. And what I can say is this interview will be put on as a podcast on the New Midlife Woman Community website, and the link and various things will be on there as well. So when you go to the website, you'll be able to find them written down there if you have any problems. So thank you again, Marion, and I hope you'll come and speak to us again, because there's so many other areas you've talked about tonight. Again,
I would love to, Jane. It's been really nice talking to you. Yes, definitely. I would love to come back.
Great. So thank you to our audience for listening. So this is Jean Mack saying good night. Maren, do you want to say goodbye to me?
Yes, I would love to. Good night, everybody, and thank you for listening.
And we'll see you all again soon. Bye. Bye.